Gin Blossoms follow you down at 19 past 8 here at 92.9 JB here. I was wandering through doing some Christmas shopping at Tamworth Shopping World earlier on over the weekend, and as I was leaving, there's a vacant store as you're exiting opposite the post office there. And I think it was a bank up till recently. I think it might have been the Northern Inland Credit Union was in there. But years ago, I'm talking the noughties, I remember that used to be a Medibank office. And I had memories. I exclaimed to someone who I was with at the time as we were leaving the shopping centre, I said, I remember when that used to be the Medibank place where after you went and saw the doctor. Kids will be alarmed by this. If you're listening, this is a true story. Ask your parents. They'll nod in agreement to this. After you saw the doctor, you would have to get a receipt on a piece of paper and you'd have to take the time out of your day, you know, on a lunch break or, you know, rock up to work late or leave early. You'd have to make your way to one of these offices, line up. If you did go during your lunch break, line up for ages as well. For ages, you'd line up. You'd have to see someone. You'd have to give them your little receipty thing. And then they'd give you your rebate for seeing the doctor. And you'd either you could put it into your bank account or they'd even give it to you in cash sometimes, which was kind of cool. I mean, you don't get it in cash nowadays. You do it digitally online and it takes a couple of days for it to get into your account. So you used to get the money instantly. But, geez, it had me thinking, God, I can't believe we used to do that. And you used to do it without any thought. You never went. I wonder if a better system is going to come along sometime where we won't have to do this anymore. But that never crossed your mind. It was just something you did. Hey? And then when the government rolls out the digital platforms, you go, oh, wow, this is cool. Do I trust it, though? But anyway, they were all secondary options. It scares me to think we used to have to what? That's one of them. Over to you, 676-2299. It scares me that we used to have to line up for minutes on end at an office to get our cash back for seeing the doctor. What does it scare you to think we used to have to do? 676-2299 or on our Facebook page and Instagram pages as well, 929 Tamworth's a handle.
If you run a local business, we radio listeners would like a word.
A word about your garden centre sale.
A word about...
Line up for the castor oil on a Sunday.
What was that?
Line up for the castor oil on a Sunday.
Yeah, right. What? Look, you've lost me on this one. You'll have to explain a little bit more. What's that?
So, back in the 70s and the early 80s, it was a remedy for worms.
Yeah. And what?
So Mum would line us all up on the Sunday and give us all a tablespoon of castor oil.
Oh, it's medicine. I got you now. I'm thinking, is this like something for the car or something?
Only
arrive
in... remedy for worms.
Yeah, no, I've got it. And it tasted foul. Is that the stuff?
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, I know what you mean. I've never had it, but I've only heard bad things. And what was the other disgusting stuff you used to have to drink as well? Cod liver oil. Did you ever have that?
No, but we used to get the Bonox.
Oh, that's gross. Why did you do that?
I actually liked it. It was like a hot Vegemite tea.
Yeah, nah. Vegemite's to be eaten on toast with copious amounts of butter, not in a drink. Who invented that?
Yeah, it was kind of like remedy for cold or, you know, chesty cough or something. It was the Bonox and hot water.
You know what?
I'm a 70s child, so...
I don't want to sound like a boomer, but you know what? That's why... You guys are the survivors. Honestly, it's the castor oil and the Bonox you grew up on. That's why you guys will live forever. See?
Absolutely.
That's why you've got no allergies. No. You very rarely get sick, all of that stuff. That's why. See?
Absolutely.
Used to get all of that stuff. The kids nowadays wrapped up in their cotton wool. Jeez. I won't continue. I sound like
kids
a boomer.
Get chocolate.
Yeah, that's it. The chocolate flavored tablets. How easy they've got it.
Yeah, they got it so easy.
I know. Hey, Jody, thank you so much for the phone call.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Yeah, JB, you were talking about things that scared you that we used to have to do when we were a little bit younger.
Yeah. What you got?
What scares me is the phone. You never put your phone in your pocket because it was screwed to the wall.
Yeah.
You could never walk away from your phone because you only had about 2 metres lead. And the number you were ringing, you had to remember because you didn't have any redial. You didn't have any memory on your phone.
No.
That's what the kids just don't understand these days.
The phone numbers were a little shorter in those days as well, though.
Only 2 digits shorter.
Yeah, but
it's still hard to remember them.
A few more digits with mobile numbers now as well. They're a little longer. And do you remember, on top of that, the little Rolodex things you used to have as well next to the phone?
The ones used to fall apart occasionally, and they'd go everywhere.
They'd last about one day properly, wouldn't they?
you'd want to make sure you bought a Rolodex brand, because then at least you had warranty.
That's true, I know. The cheap ones, they'd last about a day, and then they just pop apart.
And that A would be Z, and Q would be T.
You've got it. Hey, I love that. Thank you so much.
Okay, Jody. Thanks, mate.
Cheers.
Talk
catch
you.
Bye. Thanks to Country Auto's GWM Hamill. This is JB for breakfast at 92.9. Today, December 7, 80 years ago, was the day that President Franklin D. Roosevelt said was a day that will live in infamy. Just before 8 a.m. on Sunday, December 7, 1941, the Imperial Japanese Navy Air Service attacked Pearl Harbor in a surprise military strike. The U.S. was a neutral country at the time. However, the attack led to the United States' formal entry into World War II the following day. Japan intended the attack as a preventative action to prevent the U.S. Pacific Fleet from interfering with its planned military action in Southeast Asia against overseas territories of the U.K., the Netherlands, and those of the U.S. Pearl Harbor was attacked by 353 Imperial Japanese aircraft. Of the 8 U.S. Navy battleships present in the harbor, all were damaged, with 4 sunk. A total of 188 U.S. aircraft were destroyed, and important installations such as power stations, dry docks, and shipyards destroyed. Over the years, there's been much debate and conspiracy theories about how much America knew about the attacks in the lead-up to December 7. As early as 1924, various army chiefs displayed concern for vulnerabilities of U.S. assets in the Pacific. However, because the attack occurred without a declaration of war and without an explicit warning, the attack on Pearl Harbor was later judged as a war crime. By 9:30 a.m. that Sunday morning, just over an hour and a half after the first shots were fired, the attack was over. 2,008 sailors were killed and another 710 wounded. All of the Americans killed or wounded during the attack were legally non-combative, given there was no state of war when the attack occurred. 9 casualties came from the local Honolulu Fire Department, who sent fire trucks into the scene to assist. 3 civilian aircraft flying in the vicinity of Pearl Harbor were also shot down in the attacks. Today, 80 years ago, would have wide-ranging implications on how the remainder of World War II would play out, with the introduction of the United States, who would ultimately assist in winning World War II for the Allies and cement itself as the global superpower afterwards. However, the interest and legacy of what occurred on December 7, 1941 continues to this day through movies, TV series, and still much historical debate. Time to chat with Meg Coffey. She's our social media strategist. Meg, how are you?
I'm fantastic. How about you?
Yeah, very well, very well. I wanted to get you on to have a bit of a chat about these anti-trolling laws that the Australian government announced sort of about a week ago. Not with a lot of detail at the original announcement, but a little bit's kind of trickled out since then. Your thoughts on this, Meg?
So, look, the optimist in me is really happy about this, because it says, you know, the government is actually taking a stand. It's protecting its people. It's saying that we need to have rules and regulations about, you know, social media and the way things are said online and what is said online. However, the cynic in me goes, you know, this is just a whole bunch of, you know, hot air and I don't know, election promises, yeah. whatever. How are they going to do this? This is a global industry. You can't regulate global industries domestically, and we need a lot more background in it, right?
Yeah.
We need a lot more info. So, like, the trolling laws, what exactly is that? People were freaking out because they go, you know, well, I need my privacy. Well, read the rules. We're not saying that everyone's privacy is going to be given away. It's only the people that are doing the wrong thing. I like that.
Yeah, totally. It's one of those things where I think the proof will really be in the detail for this, won't it?
Yeah, you know, so people, you know, we know that social media and privacy is a good thing in regards to, say, the Arab Spring, right? Or where people need their anonymity because they don't have a way of spreading the word of what's really happening. But if you are someone that is out there that is constantly abusing others and saying bad things, no, you don't get to hide behind that. And I do think that we need the trolling laws and the regulations because people just think that they can say whatever they want, and that's not okay.
A lot of other countries haven't had a lot of success with these kind of laws either, have they?
Well, no, because exactly that. You know, it's a global industry, and how do you regulate that? And all you got to do is jump on a VPN, you know, and you can mask your IP address, and you're not in Australia anymore. Yeah. So it's hard to track people down, you know. But we know with the Facebook papers and all the information that's come out that Facebook and Instagram are harmful to our mental health. And I think, you know, I often chide the government, but I applaud them in this case. I think they're looking at it and taking it seriously.
And the federal government of Australia doesn't either have the greatest track record either when it comes to measures towards Facebook and sort of the digital giants. We just have to cast our minds back earlier on this year to the whole Facebook saga with news. Do you think that's going to kind of make people become a little wary on how they go with this? I know I was a little bit like that.
Well, I think this is actually where Australia is leading the charge. They got the platforms to pay up.
Yeah.
You know, and that hasn't been done in other countries. Yeah. I think that, yes, I agree. Australia is very behind on certain things.
Yeah.
But I have to give them a little bit of credit in leading the charge on how social media impacts everyday Australians as opposed to, you know, that again, the optimist in me goes, wow, they're actually thinking about the constituents and the people and what is in our best, you know, best benefit.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the other interesting thing with this, you mentioned before how other countries haven't had a lot of success with bringing these kind of laws. Do you think if the Australian government ends up introducing things like this, other countries would be watching closely at what we do?
Most definitely. I think Australia is being used as a test case in some of this. You know, right after we had all of our issues with news in February, there were some court cases and regulations in France that came into play. I think each country is tackling Facebook, Meta, whatever you want to call it, in their own special way. UK is going after some antitrust stuff. Australia is looking at, you know, the regulation of what's actually put on the platform and the responsibility of who does what. So I think, yeah, it is. Every country's tackling it in their own way as to what are the features that impact their country's users the most, perhaps.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's going to be really fascinating. I think very welcome to see how this all gets rolled out sort of over the next 12 months or so. Meg, thank you so much for the chat.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to watch, that's for sure.
Bluey, which I have to admit, I've never ever watched that. I don't have any kids. I don't know. Well, I know people that have kids. I just don't sit down and watch Bluey with them. But it looks like if I did have kids, or I was a kid, if I was born, you know, 30 years later, I should say. Or I guess if Bluey was on 30 years earlier, it's all how you look at it. I reckon Bluey would be right up my alley. But regardless, Bluey, the popular children's TV show, won Best Children's Program at the Virtual Actor Industry Awards, which took place last night. I mean, it was up against 100% Wolf, Legend of the Moonstone, the Bureau of Magical Things, Dive Club, Hardball, and Kangaroo Beach, which I've never heard of any of those. Bluey, again, I don't have any kids, and I've heard of Bluey, so no surprises there that Bluey ended up picking up. Well done. The actor-president, Russell Crowe. I didn't realize he was the actor-president. He said, "There's no doubt it's been a tough time for our industry and the world at large, and the actors offered us the opportunity to come together and recognize those who have worked so hard and produce such high-quality entertainment for people at a time when they need it most." They nominated a whole bunch of awards as well, and they are going to be handed out tomorrow in all the other categories. So well done, Bluey. This is really surprising. You know, Ibiza, the island that all the Brits go to get some sun and try and get a tan, and it's been well known for sort of being the hive of techno and EDM and doof doof music. Well, surprisingly, these guys are doing a 3-day tour, 3 shows in Ibiza. It really surprised me. Duran Duran. That's bizarre, isn't it? I mean, it's David Guetta and Marshmello and Fatboy Slim and Moby and those kind of guys that are playing in Ibiza, you know? And then there's these dudes. I mean, I know this song's a little summery and that kind of stuff, but this is like it. Bizarre. I reckon, just between you and I, that's a sign I'm getting old. Am I right? 6:42, that's the feed.